Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode number 87 of the Pika Sorelli podcast. I am one of your hosts, Emilson, and as always, I am joined by my co-host, Anomaly.
Hello.
And we have a bunch of stuff that we're going to talk about, of course, patch changes, PTR changes, but also there's been a bunch of happenings on the Twitters this week. All good, I assure you, they're all good. But it's a lot of interesting discussion, and some of which we've had on the show before, but we did want to like go over it because I think there's some really cool and interesting ideas there.
Exactly. Can't wait. I can't wait.
But before we get into that, Anom, how is Reclear? Finally.
Yeah, I know we killed Sylvanas, what, last week? I think you got her last week too, which I think after the show. So
I thought. Oh, yeah, that's right. Okay.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I was like, I could swear that you had gotten it the week before me, but no. Okay, so that's today's podcast title, by the way. Sylvanas is dead.
Exactly. Exactly. No, Reclear went about as expected for killing a bunch of difficult bosses. He only killed once about 2 months ago. So I think we spent about an hour and a half-ish, maybe a little bit longer on Painsmith, sort of just relearning that. And to be fair, I think we killed it with probably five new people in the raid that had never killed it either. So a lot of new people, plus the timings were all different. So the slower spikes suck, by the way. I hate them. Like, we ended up doing the row two strat, which is like you basically stand on like the second to last row of spikes, you just run left and right, like from opening to opening. And as long as you have enough movement, movement speed,
you just like drop chain wind rushes and
roars and and run back and forth, and it's fairly easy once you get the timing. But it took us about 2 hours to get through that, and then our next raid, we basically got stuck on Fate Scribe for about an hour and 20 minutes. And we ended up doing a different strat than progression, which was for healing it and just trying to burn the final phase, so never doing any final phase runes. Which once we made it into the final phase with everyone alive, we killed it. It was just getting to that point, like with only four healers, like different like healing cooldowns. We had to adjust some stuff in the middle. So it took us a little bit. And then we ended up not actually getting KT down this week. So kind of sucks. I think KT wipes were just, even with the new timings actually don't change the fight that much. It's really just like we wipe to like bad intermission play, essentially. Like just killing mobs too quickly up top, maybe killing the bottom too quickly and too many mobs up top. So more stuff like that. But no, it was fun to Reclear. It's fun to I sat, like, as with anything in progression or sorry farm, I sit for a lot of it, not because I want to, just because like I don't care about gear. So like unless I absolutely need an item, I generally sit. So the first half of the raid was sort of nice for me. Played some New World while they cleared, and then once we got to like Painsmith, jump back in and did the final, the back half of the instance with everybody. So it wasn't too bad.
Nice.
How was, cause you, so you got Sylvanas last. So first of all, maybe I'll ask the question is how did the Sylvanas kill feel? Cause we didn't really get a chance to talk to it with you.
Oh my God. I was so fucking done with that boss. I actually ended up pretty well liking the fight, except for its length. The fact that it's almost 15 minutes long is a real downer on a fight that's otherwise like actually pretty good. They could have just totally skipped, one of the platforms in phase two, reduce the amount of time, or just straight up reduce the length of the bridges, things like that. Just made it a little bit, phase two in particular, a little bit faster, or shorten phase one a little bit. Just take it down to a 10-minute fight. Just make it a 10-minute fight. 10 minutes a good length. 15's not. But it was a good kill. We got there, we had like a B-res left at the end or something. Like, oh no, we didn't, we used it at the end, and we had a Rep Paladin and a Holy Paladin die at the very end to Death Knives. Classic.
Classic lines.
But we killed her. We got her to like 44.8 while she was casting the final raise or something like that. Nice. So overkilled her by a decent bit. I ended up kind of liking the fight. Once you get the rhythm of being a shop vac in phase three, it actually flows reasonably well. And you can do actually a pretty decent chunk of damage to the boss as well. It's not like you're always vacuuming. Yeah. But knowing when you're about to go vacuum and when you need to like prep for that versus when you can just like blast the boss is kind of interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that I think I also, I don't know if we're gonna spend too much time on this, but I think I also really ended up enjoying the fight by the end. But you're right. I mean, like, I feel like 15 minutes is like, I would have been fine if it was even like a 13 minute fight, right? Like, I think 15 just ends up being slightly too long. And I think getting it down to that, like,
for reference, our kill was 14 minutes and 19 seconds. So
gotcha.
It's like over 14 minutes. It feels like it is basically a 15 minute fight, right? Like, it's that's close enough. I don't feel bad about calling it a 15 minute fight.
Yeah, but I agree. I mean, getting it down into like even like 10 minutes would be cool, but even like the 11 and 12 minute range probably makes it a better fight just in terms of length. But yeah, no, to be fair, we kept doing heroic, and like I think heroic is so infinitely worse. So bad. Like, and it's I think we've probably said this before, but it's one of the first times I remember like a mythic version of a fight like just being better like than a heroic version. Like, and the fight's feeling entirely different. Like, basically doing Sylvanas heroic and like dreading doing mythic Sylvanas, like, I don't think I've ever had that feeling before. Where like I turn almost like a one aim and like, man, I'd rather just do mythic forever, like never go back.
Yeah. To heroic, so. I mean, so my guild does heroic sales, and they're pretty good money. But wow, heroic Sylvanas sucks. So on the nights that we have to kill her like three times,
awful.
Not great. I actually kind of would love it if they just went like, hey, you know, we're making heroic Sylvanas, mythic Sylvanas, but with less damage.
Yeah.
Have fun, because it would be better. Like, just take out the Dark Sentinels in phase one. And that's like, maybe replace the Colossus with just another ad wave in phase two. Yeah. And then it's literally the same fight.
Yeah.
It's just like, just so much better than the heroic version.
No, I agree. So yeah, but that's awesome. That's all. And then you started your recruit last night. So did you get to kind of
reprogress? We did 5 of 10.
Okay.
We did 5 of 10 and then stopped. We had a team meeting at the start of raid that took like an hour, just to kind of recap things, talk about what we were doing on farm, what we were doing in recruitment, that kind of thing. And then just like, recleared the first 5 in like 2.5 hours and logged off.
Nice.
And we're not raiding tonight. We have tonight off because we did end up raiding last week Sunday.
Gotcha.
So, yeah.
A little bit of a break. Yeah.
Which means that tonight I'm actually going to be playing in one of the Peak of Serenity D&D games. So.
Oh, very cool. Very cool. That'll be fun. That'll be a good time. Well, awesome. Well, cool. I guess maybe, I mean, sounds like there'll be no more progression updates. Maybe a little bit of maybe some interesting farm. Yeah, maybe some interesting farm stories as we get into this.
I don't know about you guys. Actually, I'm curious. So we, over the course of this tier was actually a pretty high turnover for us.
Yeah.
We lost 2 Boomkin, a Warlock, a Tank, a Healer during progression, along with a couple of trials that we basically failed at the start of the tier. So in total, like 7 or 8 people. And then after progression, we are losing one of our Rep Paladins, as well as an Enhancement Shaman and maybe a Warrior. So it's like,
I don't know. I'm really bad about...
You said you had like 5 new people in Unpainted Smith. Is it just 5 people that weren't in for the first kill, but were on the raid team, or are they like trials?
No. So trials for most of those. So just looking at like our opening, we lost a warrior, a hunter, for sure. And actually a mage, but the problem is we recruited a mage like mid progression. So we probably only lost about 3 or 4 people. And coming out of this, I only know of one, and we lost no healer. So our healing core stayed relatively consistent. But we are losing our shaman, our main healing shaman, actually.
Rip.
Yeah, so healer-wise, we have another holy paladin that joined us a couple weeks ago while we were starting Sylvanas progression, so she'll be in moving forward. And then we have a backup shaman. But yeah, we had probably about 4 or 5 people, so similar. But it's always tough to gauge it, because I just don't, like, I don't pay attention to DPS players ever. So like, all I know is like healing cooldowns, and it's like, okay,
The healing cooldowns didn't change.
Nothing changed. People didn't change there. So like, it's whatever for me. But
yeah,
but no, yeah,
I'm on the hook for doing recruitment, so I notice everything. I forgot about Baja. We lost Baja. He was our elemental shaman, one of our elemental shaman. No. And he had produced some wonderful memes for us. We lost actually both of our like key meme production factories this year.
Oh no! We still have ours, so we still have ours, unfortunately. So we have a DH and a paladin actually that are very sort of like to yuck it up. So I like to say. Well, cool. Well, I guess we get into the news for this week. So I think there was a bunch of stuff that came out. Particularly with sort of the patch. So we'll sort of break this down into like patch updates for 9.1.5 and then a couple of classic updates and then one and then some other random updates that came out of the community, and then we'll get into sort of the topic. So the first one, I guess in general, Blizzard put out a fairly large post in terms of some updated 9.1.5 PTR notes. Sort of two, I guess, really kind of three big changes, I guess you could say, that I wanted to focus on. The first one is they started to make some adjustments to the Mechagon meta achievement, essentially making it slightly easier for you to get that achievement, reducing some of, I think, the rare spawn requirements, and then also making some of the drop rates like almost automatic versus a chance. So making it slightly easier for players to pick up the meta achievement there in Mechagon, which is good if you sort of like to go back and farm certain achievements.
Yeah. So like, for example, one of the parts of the achievement is you have to collect a bunch of different vinyls from throughout the zone. And one of them came from doing the hard mode of a specific event. And they made that one a guaranteed drop up from, you know, whatever it was before, because it wasn't guaranteed, because I've done that and I don't have that vinyl. So stuff like that, just making it, you know, you still have to go and you do the thing, but you don't have to like do the thing over and over again hoping for the 10% drop or whatever.
Exactly. Yeah, definitely a lot easier there. So some changes there, making it slightly easier to go back to some old content, which is cool. They're also making an update to Korthia. Basically, they're adding in a new weekly quest once you reach tier 4, which basically it says they will drop a large amount of Codex reputation and catalog research, essentially, I guess, once you reach tier 4, giving you like a weekly sort of jolt, additional jolt to your rep with the Korthia folks, the archivist codex. And then I think in general, like more enemies will drop relics. And if you do the rifts, more enemies in the rifts will drop more relics. So there's now a reason to go in the rifts. And just in general, like relic drops, I think, are just upping the amount of drops, which is cool.
That's to say, the Korthia rift thing is probably the most impenetrable like world content thing that they have ever released. Like the only way I know to get into the rift is to go and you do, there's the big rare boss, or yeah, the rare that's over on the island that you use one of the blue rift stones on, rift keystones.
Yeah.
To tear open, you start on top of him, you kill him, and you go and do other stuff.
So
the only way I know to get it is to use one of those blue ones. I know the green ones, and I know there's some like rift spawns that can appear throughout the zone. I've tried to use them a couple times and never actually found a rift spawn to use them on.
So you can buy, I forget, they're the green keys, stones, or whatever. You can buy those from the main guy. But then there's the way that I get in the rift is if you go to the west side of the zone, there's a cave. Like it's basically, if you go to the right down the road, it brings to that bramble area. And like that back area on the right hand side. And then to the left is like where all the fly people are and like the big trench. There's like a cave in the middle there that you go in, and there's always a rift in there. Okay. And you basically use those green things to click there, and that puts you inside the rift. But like, I agree. Like maybe there's a quest that points you there and I just didn't read it, but there's not a very good clear indicator of like, you want to go on the rift because it's slightly more dangerous, but you get like better like relic things
there. There are like quests that take place in the rift, and there's daily quests in the maw that take place in the rift. from like the assaults. Yeah. And I feel like in general, like people know about the rift, but if you don't actually like, it's just so like just getting into the rift, not even like knowing what to do once you're there, but getting into it is just like,
it's yeah.
Yeah. Like once my guild stopped doing the like rift chains where we would just like one person use their blue key and everybody go in.
Yeah.
We just, like, I just stopped because I was like, well, for one thing, I was not interested in the sockets because honestly, fuck that. But also, like,
it's a long grind. A
triple.
Yeah, it's a long grind for sure. So, yeah, that was, I guess, make it slightly easier to get that rep now, which will be cool. They also added, I guess, kind of another sort of quick thing in terms of speeding up progression. They added a new follower item that you can buy with Anima. That gives your followers like 5,000 experience. So I think it's like maybe 10 in the PTR. I think it's 10,000 anima for 5,000 experience. I think is the way that the item costs
a little bit high.
Yeah, but I think from a, I think they mentioned it's something like it's a Wowhead did a post on this.
Like I don't do any real anima. Like I do my weekly and that's about it.
Yeah,
and I have like 30,000 anima right now. So if you actually care about like doing things beyond raid logging and getting your weekly done, you probably just have like 250,000 anima right now, in which case this seems a lot more reasonable.
Yeah, yeah. And I think they said it's like it's about 800,000 anima to go from 1 to 60. So it is a fair amount. So it basically gives you, it's like their anima dump, right? Like,
yeah.
Unless you've got everybody at 60 already, there's still going to be, you know, you're still going to need this and you can dump some anima into it. So it'll be good. Yeah. Good little change there.
I don't think I have a single 60 follower. They're all like 45.
Yeah. Mine are all like mid 40s, mid to late 40s. So, so another anima dump there. And then the final thing in the notes is a Mistweaver change. They've made some additional changes to Fallen Order, which is fun. So basically what they said is essentially now, so they talked about last week, we talked a little bit about how haste no longer affects your Crane Adept's Enveloping Mist, which we as a community were never really sure of if haste was even a thing that affected it because we weren't able to reproduce what happened. But what Blizzard did clarify is now your Crane Adepts from Fallen Order will cast Enveloping Mist twice when summoned. So before it was, I think we averaged it out, you get about 1.2 enveloping mists per Crane Adept. So about one in every five would cast a second one. And now it's just everyone will cast two, which is a massive, it's a massive increase in healing. Like you almost think that we got a interim check type patch where like Blizzard's messing around with changing a bunch of things because it's PTR. And then, you know, we're just seeing like, hey, you know, expect some changes here. Because, I mean, guaranteeing two casts is actually cool. I like that. But it also means that there's going to be some compensation on the other end. Because, I mean, the current power and HPS, you know, of Fallen Order is just, it's hands down the best HPS ability that Monk has. And this just, you know, blows it. Like doubles it.
I can't wait for them to not actually nerf any of this and for us to go into the patch with Windwalker being the best AoE in the game by like a bajillion miles, Mistweaver to be the best healing throughput in the game by a metric fuck ton, and Brewmaster to still be just kind of there.
Yeah.
Yep. Not that Brewmaster's bad. Brewmaster's actually fine, but it would be wild if for even just the span of 915, like what I would honestly be knocked, be shocked to happen is that they don't nerf any of this going into 915.
Yeah.
Mistweaver and Windwalker are just nutso for the duration of 915, and then 9.2, they get the nerf bet just in time for the new raid.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that would be, I mean, like, you'd almost, like, the way that this would play out in typical, I'd say, Mistweaver, even Monk fashion would be like, this goes live through Heroic Week, and then literally on the onset of Mythic, we get that Monday patch, and it's just like, Fallen Order is nerfed by 90%. And you're just like, well, they took something that was extremely overpowered, now made it absolutely worthless. And now I have to refarm or change covenants or do something crazy in the next 24 hours, right? So I'm not ruining my raid or like taking over a raid spot. So, I mean, To be fair, people are like going crazy, not going crazy, but a lot of people are like, oh, like when's the nerf coming, or you know, is this real? And I think it's just Blizzard trying to test out some things, right? And we just get to see the middle of it. And if it does stay like this, you probably see some sort of compensating change, whether that's in like the spell power coefficients or like maybe something to Sinister Teaching as a legendary. But yeah,
I think they would have a hard time adjusting Sinister Teachings as a legendary, given that it's worthless for Brewmaster and Windwalker.
Yeah.
But maybe they would be fine changing it as just like a Mistweaver change, because it's asked for Brewmaster and Windwalker, and so it literally doesn't matter.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the other thing too is the other specs just have stronger, like, we'll say general legendaries or like stronger spec-specific legendaries, right? Mistweaver just doesn't. I think it's a combination of Mistweaver not having something that's overly powerful in terms of legendaries available to us, and at the same time, like Fallen Order just being so good in terms of HPS. So, you know, we'll see how it plays out. But yeah, that's a big change. I don't get too excited about PTR stuff because you almost expect them to change it.
Yeah, it's not real until it lands in the live game.
Exactly. Exactly. And then one other thing along with this is with these changes, Hina Lover, who sort of our SimC expert, I think across all the specs, was digging into the SimC data, the spell data, and basically found too that they removed one of the flags that essentially now allows our Crane Adepts to cast Soothing Mist and Enveloping Mist at the same time. I mean, they'll essentially full channel Soothing Mist while casting Enveloping Mist on top of it. Which equates to, I think Abbe said, about a third, like 33% more Soothing Mist healing. So Soothing Mist healing isn't a massive amount from the Crane Adepts. Most of the power is from that Enveloping Mist, but still a little bit more healing there.
To me, that sounds like we need to make sure that these are actually casting this twice, so we're going to let them cast both at the same time.
Yeah, yeah. I think they probably just can't figure out how to end the Soothing Mist early, right? I mean, I guess it could change the duration of it, but yeah.
Yeah, that's just way more complicated than letting them cast it during this like channel that doesn't do that much healing.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So lots of, I mean, that's a massive, I think, big change for us, but yeah, it was, lots of cool PTR stuff, I'd say.
Yeah.
At least in the big notes. There was a couple other things real quick that are coming out. Number one, they're actually adding in a Mythic Plus title. So titles have generally been a PvP only thing, like with the Gladiator titles and things like that. But now they've added essentially what they're calling the Tormented Hero title, which essentially, if you're in the top 0.1% of players in terms of rating for your faction, you get this Tormented Hero title, which I think is cool. You know, like recognize the people who like grind out this Mythic Plus stuff, and you know, it doesn't really cost anything. And now that they actually have a rating system in game, they can do this.
This is exactly the kind of thing that we wanted to see come out of them adding rating in game. Yeah. By having that rating, they can go, yep, you're in the top 0.1% of like Mythic Plus rating overall. Here's your title, have a good time.
Yep, exactly. Exactly. So cool on them for adding a new title. Which will be fun. So a little bit, I guess moving forward a little bit, Blizzard released a couple of notes just on some of the Legion time walking and some of the older soloing of instances. So the first big one is Mythic Aranar. Essentially, if you did not do this fight, Aranar was a fight where you essentially never fought a single boss. It was like a bunch of ad waves that would come in. And your goal was to basically control those ad waves. They were all over this large area. It was like multiple leveled arena, essentially. So soloing it was very difficult because you'd have to kill mobs all over the place.
The issue with it was actually that you couldn't, you literally couldn't get to all the ads unless you were like a demon hunter. Even after the other changes they made.
Yeah. And that was... The
change that they made this week to it is there's a extra action button you get called Surge of Life. It bounces you up in the air. You get to then glide down. If you ever did the thing in WoD where you combined like the meteor toy and the one that shot you way up in the air. That's what this is basically. They reduce the cooldown from 30 seconds to 10 seconds. So it's basically going to let you get from each ad wave to the next one without being a demon hunter.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's basically, yeah, the movement just lets you move from area to area much quicker. And yeah, you should never be in a situation where like you physically can't move your character fast enough to stop the ads from then killing or reaching the end. And if they reach the end, they basically kill the boss or kill the thing you're trying to keep alive. I don't,
yeah.
Because it's Aranar is trying to be kept alive. I don't actually know the lore there.
I have no idea.
So yeah, so that was sort of Mythic Aranar, some again tuning changes for older content, which we know is coming. And then the other thing too is they released a little bit of a couple notes on Mythic Plus, and essentially their note was, you know, as players or as dungeons, these things are not being scaled, or sorry, players not being scaled down to enter the dungeon. The dungeons are being scaled up to basically meet the difficulty sort of we expect it at our current power level. So with that design philosophy in mind, you know, that's why they sort of removed essences in any of the Legion specific systems, like legendaries and the relics and stuff like that. Because the idea is we're doing these dungeons at today's power, right?
Yeah.
So they're taking a look at, they're going to scale it up. You almost, whenever they do this, which I find is going to be just great, is there's going to be some broken item for at least a week. So,
yeah.
I mean, I'd say keep in mind that, because I think the loot that's dropping is supposed to drop at appropriate levels to like Mythic Plus. So you'd see what's like a 15, it's like 233 out of the box.
240 something. It's 240 okay. something.
Oh, sorry.
Oh, the box is 252, but you can't get Legion. Oh, sorry. The vault is 252.
Yeah.
The box at the end of the dungeon. Is it 239? It might be 239.
I thought it was in like the 230s because the final two are upgraded.
Yeah, you're right. I was thinking heroic eye level was Sylvanas eye level, which is 246, but it's not.
Yeah.
So it's going to be like 236 or 239, something like that.
Yeah. Which I think like maybe armor wise, you're not going to equip it, but trinkets and essentially other interesting items will definitely be on the table. So keep that in mind for some broken trinkets coming into the pool here from Legion time walking. So it'll be fun. I'm excited to go back and do some of those instances. So I feel like, I think we talked about this, but this is sort of a lost area with Blizzard, is they never go back and reuse content, which I think done the right way, I think it's fine. But like, yeah, don't give me the same raid and not a new one. But hey, if I want to go back and do raids at like harder raids with my friends and not matter, like I 100% want to do that. So so cool. So next up is an interesting new feature, sort of stepping out of this, coming to Warcraft Logs, which essentially is VS Code in Warcraft Logs. So for those of you who don't know, VS Code, which I don't know why they describe it like this, it's essentially an IDE or a
development. The reason they describe it like that is the VS Code editor is in TypeScript. So they literally embedded it in the page. That's why they describe it that way.
Gotcha. Okay. Because I know that GitHub just integrated a VS, like a similar idea, but it's like VS Code in the cloud where you can use like the full editor to do like updates in GitHub, like in like PRs and stuff like that. But anyway, not on topic. But yeah, so they've essentially in Warcraft Logs, you're now able to write like JavaScript code against the log to generate like graphs or, you know, generate certain metrics, right, that you find interesting. So Yax, one of the Warcraft Logs developers, sort of tweeted out an interesting thing about, you know, some of the testing or some of the preview of the feature that they're working on, which I think is for a normal user is going to be absolutely worthless. I'll be completely honest with you, but for like probably an individual like yourself, Emelson, or like other high-end guilds, right, or people that just enjoy looking at metrics and stuff like that, this will be a lot easier to just sort of run some interesting stuff against multiple logs, not needing external tools. Because in a lot of cases, like this is what Warcraft or WoW Analyzer does, this is what, you know, Wipefest did, right, and even Progstats, right? Like the idea is like, a lot of this
is a little bit different. I don't think this can work on Progstats, because what Progstats does mostly is it actually takes all of your logs
and it's an aggregator.
That's fair. And this doesn't, is from what they've said, doesn't actually like let you go across multiple logs. Mm-hmm. That's still like a limitation of it. But I do actually have something else that I had worked on. I actually might be able to pull it up right now and just kind of, it's loading. That basically did this externally, but it was very easy to run into like API rate limits, and there's a bunch of limitations that come with that. Because you have to like, you can't like download all of the events. It's way too expensive.
Yeah.
But, like, I have a bunch of stuff that I did for this that, you know, I have charts and they're mostly like not loaded because I haven't used it that actively, but it's the same kind of thing. Like,
yeah. Hey, I remember you sharing this. Yeah. Doing some analysis on like why you wipe or what you die to, which will be, it'll be interesting to see. So the feature, very cool. I'm also interested to see like the sort of community that develops around this, right? Like similar to like the weak aura community, right? I'd say like the one thing that people don't share too much is like essentially the old version of this, which would have been like, what do they call them? Not pins, but queries. It's like building like queries inside of the query editor of Warcraft logs. Like I have one that sort of I can paste at the end of any log and it shows me exactly when people use certain cooldowns in like healing cooldown wise, which is how I used to do it before I cheated and just used Wipefest, their event viewer. So I mean the idea there is it'll be interesting to see what the sort of the community pops up around like sharing certain code snippets that might work for like a standard boss, right? And being able to call out your raiders for being bad at mechanics is really what I'm sort of focused in on. So cool. So yeah, more to it looks like Yax really just previewed it this week, but more to come on that hopefully soon.
From everything they said, it's a long ways off, which is kind of sad because I want it now. But
yeah.
In the meantime, like if you really need it now, I don't know, shoot me a DM. I have stuff that does things kind of like this. It's just more limited. So
yeah,
if you want to get started, you could get started now.
Be awesome. Well, cool. So only a couple more sort of wrap up topics real quick. There was a quick update into Season of the Mastery, which of course is the WoW classic year long thing where they're basically condensing all of classic in a 1 year sort of timeline. They basically, let you go a little bit further. But they also increased the experience buff that you get from quest turning from 25% to 40%, which potentially helps a ton since quest XP is, you know, generally a large percentage of your leveling anyway. So now you basically can just hopefully just clear through quests and stay on level, not have
to grind. The thing about like classic questing is that it's actually a very small amount of your experience that comes from quests. It's a big chunk, but if you look at the actual amount of XP you get like from killing a mob, you know, you on a lot of quests get more XP from killing the mobs that are required to actually complete the quest than you do from the quest itself, and often by a sizable margin. You know, there's a quest I did in Tanaris recently where I had to kill like 10 of one kind of bandit, 10 of another kind of bandit, and 3 of a third kind. And if you tally up all of the XP from those, even without the rested bonus, it was like twice as much as the quest. And then you add in all the extra mobs that I had to kill, because I had to kill, you know, this third kind of bandit like 20 times before I was able to actually kill all the ones that were actually required. It ends up being a lot more.
That's true, actually. I forgot that. And then you also enter the situation too of like needing drops from certain mobs, and like those drops just never, there's that crocodile quest in the Baron, what's the first orc zone, outside of Orgrimmar. I was Durotar. There's like there's crocodiles along the river between Durotar and the Barrens that you have to kill for like one drop, and I remember literally going up and back that, like maybe like up once and back once and like finally getting the item. So that's like 20 or 30 crocs I can kill. So that's actually, you're right then. So I mean, I guess this might just, I mean, that's, I think it'll help just speed it up, but
yeah, that started to change in Burning Crusade, where Burning Crusade quests in Outlands are a lot more skewed towards the actual quest experience. Mm-hmm. And then it really changed in Wrath, where like mob XP didn't become irrelevant, but like predominantly came from doing quests.
Yeah. So good. They're still making updates there. I'm actually really interested. Maybe I'll check that out and try and level and see. I'll do something with that. We'll see. And then final thing before we get into the main topic of today is they did release the affix list for all the dungeons, both level and affixes.
For the MDI.
For the MDI final, sorry. Yeah, for the MDI global finals. So that is, it's interesting. So looking at it quickly, the one interesting thing I saw was that there's only one necrotic there and one sanguine in terms of all of it. They're not together.
They didn't put the sanguine in sanguine. Yeah. It is necrotic and sanguine in Plaguefall.
Yeah. That would have been nice. But yeah, no, a couple of burstings. You know, bursting is sort of a reused one. Spiteful too, which is one of the new affixes. But yeah, I think the funny thing is like quaking, I think, is used twice. But yeah, I think sanguine and necrotic mostly being like the affix most healers and tanks hate the most.
Yeah. There's Grievous on there once as well in Halls of Atonement. Yeah.
Which that'll be interesting. Grievous on that final gauntlet in Halls will be, or no, sorry. I'm thinking of sanguine. Sorry. But yeah, Grievous in Halls, I guess, isn't too bad. But yeah, so then you have all the affix combos, which will be nice. So, so cool. Any other topics before we jump into to the main topic?
I don't think so.
Okay. All right. So I don't know if you wanna introduce, I guess, the first thing, and we can sort of talk through it.
So Wyatt Cheng, some of you will remember him. He is the Don't You Have Phones guy from the Diablo Immortal announcement. Also one of the designers on Diablo 3. And really gives some, I think, important context and insight, not just in how the Diablo 3 design and development went and why it was the way it was at launch, but also, I think, is important context for understanding the World of Warcraft development, because, well, let's actually just get into what he said and talk about it then. So this is, of course, from Twitter. I'm looking at it on Wowhead because that's the link we have on hand. But basically, the context here is that there is the ongoing discussion about the real money auction house on Twitter this past week. From Diablo 3 and how loot felt different in Diablo 2 Reforged or Resurrected, whatever it's called, in comparison to that. But basically, he is pushing back on the idea that the Diablo 3 loot system was tuned around the auction house. So basically he's saying, you know, a lot of people had the experience that the tuning of Diablo 3 pushed them towards using the auction house, but that's different from the design intent because they actually internally tested it. Like when they were testing the loot system, when they were testing, you know, the tuning, they didn't test it with the auction house. The auction house was not enabled. So they were actually the whole, like all of Diablo 3 was tuned around not having access to the auction house at all. The problem is that so in Diablo 2, when your progress slows down and you have to start farming, that's all you can do. Like you start farming, there's nothing else you can do short of like going and modifying your save. So you just have to like suck it up and farm. Diablo 3, you could go to the auction house. So when you reach that point that you would in Diablo 2, you know, have to start farming. Instead, the most efficient thing to do by a large margin was to go and get your credit card and go on the real money auction house. Because let's be honest, that's where all the really good items were. So this is something that like he talks about the limitations of their testing. So of course, like they should have predicted that the auction house would change how people engage with the loot system. But basically he talks about like, you know, their public testing needed to include more of the game so that they had a better sense of how people were going to engage with like the harder difficulties and things like that, as well as like having more time to go back and revise the tuning, revise the game following that public testing, which is something that I feel like World of Warcraft is needed on multiple occasions. But yeah. The final point that he gets to is that the game is going to be perceived not in terms of the actual design intent, which was not for the players to turn to the audience, but in terms of how people actually engage with the game, which was turning to the auction house to get loot.
Yeah, which is I think it's something that we sort of always sort of see, even like sort of drawing parallels to WoW, right? And we can even draw parallels to, like, let's say something we talked about earlier today, which is like the change to the Mistweaver Fallen Order monks, right? To now casting two envelopings instead of one. And I think the biggest problem, the biggest question that we always get in terms of like a Discord is like, why is this change being done? And it's very difficult to always answer that one, because like you don't get a chance to see behind the scenes. So like in this Diablo 3 example, like at the time I was one of the people who was like, well, I don't think I ever said they designed the game around needing the auction house. My point was always that the auction house was a way to capitalize on what you did in D2 anyway, once you got really into the game, which was use a site like D2JSP, which is like a trading site, right? Where you could buy D2JSP gold, which was a made up thing, but you could spend money and get coins, right? And you could trade items back and forth through that. And it was sort of its own like outside of the game auction house. So that was always my thinking about it, but I can definitely see how like the community
taking it and putting it like inside the game is like
it just seemed like a cat, like not a, maybe not a cash grab, but a way to monetize what they knew would probably happen anyway, right?
Yeah, it's very much like their reasoning for the WoW token, where like people are going to buy gold anyway, so we might as well have them buy gold from us.
Exactly, which is from a business perspective makes sense. But this is, I think, where I don't think Wyatt really sort of nails this down, but there's I think a disconnect from like a community perception perspective with any game, where like it's not just a bunch of guys or individuals who want to make a great game, right? There's also a bunch of individuals who have to pay bills, right?
Yeah.
And not just their own bills, but like the company has bills to pay. So there's like sort of always a business aspect of it too. So yeah, I mean, yeah. I think from the design intent perspective, I feel bad for Diablo 3, because I honestly don't think this was the only issue with it at launch. I think this definitely contributed to it, because the biggest problem that in my mind was the disparity in the type of loot you got, right? Like, and like the fact that you could go, you know, multiple sessions without something that increased your power, right? And then look to an auction house staring you in the face, where like, hey, if I just spent $20, I could get that power, right? And I think, you know, and why it sort of says this, I think they naively thought like the players who wanted to engage with the auction house would engage with it, and the players who didn't, and they'd sort of go their separate ways. But I think what actually happened was,
and he references stuff like the SSF servers that PoE has, where solo self-found, where like there's no trading, like you just can't trade items, you get what you get, and you play with that, which is the model that Diablo 3 moved towards with the expansion, where trading was like heavily restricted, the auction house was removed and all of that.
Which is, I to be fair, I play PoE solo self-found generally. Like I don't like engaging with the trading aspect of it. Just
I think
to be
that's
fair,
how a lot of people are.
Yeah, I just don't get it. But I will tell you that if PoE had a auction house that I could click a button in the UI on and see a bunch of things I could spend money on, I probably still wouldn't spend the money, but like I'd be like, this is stupid. Like this is dumb. Like, why am I farming when like, if really the challenge there is like, do like I make a couple extra bucks and shove it into this game, right? To update it. So yeah, I mean, I guess like to his point, there's a lot of other issues I think outside of D3, but outside of like what the point he's trying to make with D3. But I think his point's pretty important in the idea of like, we try to design, like maybe it's not try to design, we tried to play a game and then we added this extra system on top of it and didn't give that extra system enough time to then retest everything we had already tested, right?
Yeah,
because that's sort of I think like what I get out of it is like, hey, we tested the game and do we love the sort of the difficulty curve, like the fact that you have to go back and farm, you'd slowly slog your way, just like D2 was, right? It was just D3, updated graphics, different abilities, different classes, right? And then, right at the end, we added this auction house, which just ruined everything, which sucks. Like, yeah. as a designer, as somebody who's building a game, I'd be super pissed off. Like, and maybe not, I think I'd be more pissed off, like, not the fact that the auction house is in the game, but that, like, it was in so late and then, like, had, like, a 180 shift in terms of, like, what the game ended up being for me.
I think he also references, like, that they only had Act 1 normal testable. Like, you could only go up to the Skeleton King. And that's it. You couldn't go into higher difficulties. They didn't get to see how players engaged with, like, the requirement to farm, for example. They didn't really have a lot of opportunity for people to engage with the loot itself, because you just don't get that much loot in Act 1 normal.
Yeah.
And I think that's something as well that he references, like, wishing that they had like 80 or 90% of the game, like, publicly testable. I think that might have remedied some of the issues, because you referenced there are other issues besides the auction house itself. Like, the loot system as a whole didn't pan out very well. There were a lot of legendaries that were just useless. There were a lot of cases where it was correct to wear, like, a yellow item that is, like, a rare item instead of a legendary. Just because the yellow item was literally better. Most of the legendaries didn't have unique effects. They were just, like, regular items, but with better stats. And often, like, the stats that they guaranteed were actually not stats that you wanted. So you would get quite literally a bad legendary. There was just a legendary that rolled badly on the stats that they didn't guarantee.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I think it all contributed to it. And I think, if we take a look at this in terms of, like, WoW, right? Like, WoW has done similar things with systems where they've put things in place that I think maybe in designers' heads, like, work, and maybe internally work, right? In terms of their sort of sound, like, I'm not going to say it's a sounding board, but, like, in terms of their, like, iterative process, like, internally, right? But then as soon as the players get it, it becomes, like, and enough people can view it, it's just the entire wrong thing, right? Like, the class, like, to me, the best example of that is Azorite armor. Like, it just in general, in terms of a system that got to us way too late, in the limited testing you have a large number of players doing, a lot of the feedback aligned with what the ultimate problems with the system were, but they just didn't give themselves enough time to make changes to it. So they sort of had to jump in and go with it, right?
There's some things as well where, like, there is the design intent, I think it was pretty clear early on in BFA that they were, Azorite armor was intended to be like legendaries. It was intended to be like this legendary kind of thing. That's why initially you couldn't trade them. The drop rate was, like, the acquisition was pretty limited, that kind of thing. And that's not how players received it at all. They weren't actually legendaries. I actually do wonder if they had actually had that orange color, would players have been up in arms over the fact that they couldn't trade them?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. So here's the thing is, I think players would still be up in arms if the same item dropped for all, like, so, like, all the leather items were called the same thing. So if, like, the name was the same and it just happened to drop from you, so it had different traits on it, then I'd still think players would be upset. But if it was
that's a great point.
If it was like a unique name, even if it was per class, like, maybe they wouldn't be, like, as weird as that sounds, like, I think that would have probably been okay. But yeah, and the iteration where, like, it's the same item, it's just the Azorite differs depending on what class you are, then it probably players would still be upset about that, you know. So I mean, I think in my mind, I think the other thing that why it, like, I know that this wasn't supposed to be a, like, not an apology, but like a, like, post-mortem of what they did on D3, right? It was just sort of, I think he just got a little fed up with some sort of thing and made a bunch of tweets about it, which is whatever. But the one thing I wish Blizzard would maybe do a little bit more of is, like, actually acknowledge them making bad decisions, right? Yeah. Like, I think that they don't do that enough. But they do it, and they also do it in a way that makes it seem like the decision wasn't bad. It's just the players made it seem worse than it was. Used it
badly.
Or like there was, it's not like, it's like a 70-30 relationship versus like 100% zero relationship in terms of like how they sort of explain things. Like I think Ian's last post about what they're doing at 9.15 sort of hints at that, right?
But I mean, kind of in that same vein, like domination sockets from this tier are another example of a system that maybe it played fine internally and actually from a math perspective actually is fine in terms of the acquisition rate relative to tier sets. Just ended up being extremely frustrating for a number of reasons that kind of only make sense when you're starting to look at, you know, people trying to compete with each other, people trying, like, nobody's playing this in a vacuum. Nobody's, you know, in a raid team going, oh, I don't care how I do relative to the other people in my raid group. Like, right, the one person that gets their unholy set week one and is a literal god compared to every other DPS in the raid, that's tilting as hell. People don't like that. And not being able to do anything about it, except literally split runs. Split runs being the only solution was a huge failure. In the same vein as like the auction house kind of undermining the design intent of Diablo 3, like split runs existing basically undermining the design intent here, as well as just like human psychology undermining the design intent, which there's nothing they can do about that one. They just need to design things differently. But
yeah, exactly. But yeah, it's just it's an interesting look in terms of like, I mean, it's candid in terms of like him being like, yeah, we probably should have had more things, like more time to iterate on this stuff, or like, you know, probably should have put more of the game out there for larger scale testing, which would have highlighted some of these issues. But yeah, it's a tough position to be in, I feel like in terms of today's games. I think that's the other thing that people maybe don't fully realize is like making anything today is very expensive, and like asking for more time is like, to be fair, like I would say like when original, like when WoW was like back in 2004 2003 time frame, right? Like particularly for a company like Blizzard, you know, they had huge successes in StarCraft, right? Huge successes in Warcraft 3 at that point. And so they were just probably flush with money, and so like to them an extra 4 weeks on something to pay a team that might have been maybe 30 people is like not that big a deal, right? But like nowadays when like development teams are like in the 70s and 80s and hundreds, like 4 more weeks of salaries for 100 people is like not a small amount of money, right? Before you start recouping some of that cost. So yeah, I mean, I think that's the other side of it, is just like games are just, it's more difficult to make today, right? Or just they require more people. So
I do think that he makes a strong case for, if we had had more time, Diablo 3 wouldn't have been such a explicit failure
when
it came out.
Yeah, which is sad, because like I still play pretty much every other Diablo 3 season for like 2 weeks, which to me is like perfect amount of time to dive into the game. And
it just sucks. I actually have been thinking about picking it back up and like playing the next season that comes out.
Yeah, it's, I mean, there's still enough dopamine getting those sick items, right? There's still enough dopamine like when you pick a build and you finally put it together and then you blast your next couple of like rifts or whatever, like that feels good. And they've streamlined like the power acquisition, so you get like your seasonal set now, so like, you know, there's like a nice little like, hey, I can get to the farming stage of this, and then it's just farm, get my items, then I get to blast, and then like it takes about 2 weeks before I'm like, okay, like I don't push rank one like paragon stuff, so for me it's like I get to my goal and we're good. Yeah, so it's a good game, but it sucks that it's such a bad start. And a lot of it, people are like, yeah, the auction house, which is, yeah, interesting idea of like, generally, I feel like a lot of times from a community, when we say Blizzard designed something around something, we're probably off.
Yeah.
And exactly how it came about. So,
yeah.
So that's on the Wyatt thing. I guess we can switch, unless you had anything else to say.
I think that about covers it. Yeah. Switch
a couple gears. So we'll switch gears to Magdalena, and Magdalena put out a series of tweets, sort of another Twitter thread, responding to actually a Trill tweet to start this off, which was Trill basically tweeted out that like item and stat diversity in WoW is very important, and then basically items being better or worse in certain situations creates value in obtaining them more than just this is the best, and basically allows players to make their own decisions about what's best for them. And I think, you know, that sort of triggered sort of the thought here, right? The thread. Magdalena goes into a bunch of sort of different posts sort of span a bunch of different things, right? With the fact that, like, you know, item diversity in retail WoW was probably at its height back in like MOP, right, is where I think sort of they center on being sort of the best piece, or even like WoD to a lesser extent, right? Yeah. Of where you had, and this is sort of something that Blizzard has not done the best job at, is like you had very simple to understand things that were just effective, right? Like, yeah, particularly in trinket design and MOP, and other things. So it's a pretty elaborate thread where they go through around the fact that, like, you know, a couple other points, just like on the fact of scaling, right? Like, scaling was fairly bad back in the day in terms of like your first raid to your last raid, where, you know, by your last raid, you just had like too many secondary stats, right? Like, just in terms, yeah, of like the amount of power that was there. And the fact that, like, you know, once you got to that level of scaling, it becomes difficult for items to mean anything more than like just get the higher eye level version of it, right? So I think it's an interesting sort of thread just to sort of read through and get some thoughts from. I mean, Magdalena, for those who don't know, like, I only know of them through Twitter, I'll be completely honest with you. But I know that they at a time had were a very vocal voice in terms of theory crafting, particularly with, I think, Death Knights. Death Knights, but just in general, like a very vocal, like, theory crafting voice. So it's interesting to hear, you know, their take on this. And the fact that, like, yeah, I mean, like, stats in general in WoW are sort of, I mean, they're sort of boring. I mean, to be fair,
it really has actually, kind of to build on our previous discussion, kind of the same issue as initial itemization in Diablo 3, where, yeah, the stats, there's a lot of boring stats. There's a lot of stats that just aren't good. Well, a lot. We have 4 total stats. There's like main stat, haste, crit, verse, mastery. So 5 stats. Mm-hmm. And for virtually everybody, you know, versatility is the bad stat, or mastery is the bad stat. So you really end up with like most classes caring about 3 stats, and you just really want to make them go up. There's no real thought into it. And that translates into just equipping the highest item level gear. And so one of the things they highlight that I think is interesting is that prior to the midpoint of Wrath of the Lich King, when you went into a higher difficulty of raid, or, you know, you went into your heroic dungeon, it wasn't dropping actual higher eye level loot. It dropped totally new items. Like, yeah, the items were actually different. So I didn't raid in Wrath, but I did do a lot of heroic dungeons in Burning Crusade. And, like, you would still, basically what would happen is you would get, you know, you would kill the last boss of a dungeon, and in addition to its normal mode loot, it would drop an epic item. And that was like a totally new item. It wasn't just the same item as normal, but with a higher eye level on it. Right. And I do think that that is a key factor in why loot in WoW is just really not very interesting, is that most of the loot is functionally just that one number. It's that eye level number. And I hate it. But
yeah.
And that's also one of the reasons that I think the seasonal model for WoW has kind of fallen flat, because getting the same items with higher numbers on them is honestly just not very interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. And I feel like they sort of take, I mean, so I think there's a couple things here, right? Like, stats in general, like going back to like having a stat like multi-strike, and I think they even talk about, like, Magdalena talks about like hidden expertise
being, and
yeah,
oh yeah,
so sorry, so talking more about like what was removed, like hit and expertise, which I agree, like those are just stats you had to maintain at a certain level, which maybe adds, yeah, some level of complexity, but not interesting. But yeah, like when you talk about like multi-strike, or yeah, they bring up the fact that a lot of the SSO trinkets contained sort of a precursor to maybe what additional secondaries we could have, and like having, there was like a CDR trinket in there and amplification, yeah, and things like that. And it would be interesting to see what they could do with sort of 2 things, right? Adding in an additional stat or 2, like secondary, right, that you need to balance or sort of build around. And then in turn 2, like truly having different items, right? This whole, you even see it in Mythic Plus, right? Like you're chasing the same item. It's just four numbers higher, right? So like those four numbers equate to like two more intellect and like three more whatever on the proc, right?
And it's really like the worst part about it, this expansion has been how much it all centers on doing the same dungeon repeatedly.
Yeah.
So for example, I've done so many Plague Falls and so many the other sides. Because like Plague Fall drops like three best in slot items. The other side drops a trinket that is simply like, well, actually, I don't even know if I would use the trinket anymore, which is kind of funny, but it's one of those things too where like I ran probably 20 Plague Falls this season. One thing doesn't contribute score because you only get the score for doing a 15 of it once, which is kind of annoying. But also just like I'm not doing that again next season. I ended up not even getting a Pox Storm. Like I don't have a Pox Storm. I didn't get the file. I have the ooze trinket, which is pretty good at least, but I didn't get either I didn't actually get any of the items that I wanted out of those Plaguefall runs.
That's funny.
So yeah.
Yeah, that's
just a whole separate issue, but yeah.
Yeah, and that's sort of then it just feels bad, right? If it's the one item you want to get and like there's not a compensating item out there, right? Like
yeah.
Right. And it's an item that
all the other Mythic Plus items are just worse versions of raid items, basically.
Right. And I'm assuming these are trinkets that you would use pretty consistently, right? They're not like, hey, I need this trinket for like one or two bosses or like one or two encounters and then we're good. It's like, no, this is like the only trinket I'll ever equip again until next season when it goes up in eye level, right?
When I got my scale of Hakar last season at eye level 210, not even max eye level last season, I wore that from the point that I got it until I got a trinket this season.
Yeah.
I wore it like pretty much nonstop. I think the only boss I didn't wear it on was like maybe SLG. I wore a different trinket on because the shield from that didn't do anything with the healing reduction. So I think I put a cheat death trinket on instead.
Gotcha.
But yeah.
Yeah. And I think that again gets it back to the point of just like, there's sort of stat diversity and then item diversity too, where like they sort of play hand in hand, right? Like if you have to balance more stats, but if there's more stats that you can sort of interact with and items can interact with, you sort of gain that sort of level of like, okay, you know, this is some interesting stuff. I think to be fair, I think the other side of this too, and not to put this all on Blizzard, right? The other side of this too is like as a community, I think we've also gotten better with our tooling and with like the way that we view items in terms of like identifying how good something actually is. And I think that's sort of the other side of this is that we run up against this sort of almost like an arms race between us and Blizzard, right? And like I get Blizzard's point, and I think you actually said this too, which is like they want to get to the point where like you don't need a bunch of tooling to like, there's not always one right decision, right? But I think at the same time, that's generally what the community is sort of, our goal is, right? Our goal is to say like, hey, in these situations, here's the best, like, here's what you want to be playing. And I think at a certain point, those are two sort of diametrically opposed like ideas, right? But I think the way that Blizzard helps us not be able to get to that best list is really to introduce more thing, right?
Yeah,
and not more systems, systems, but like just more items, right? Or so, interesting items.
funny thing, I think actually the thing that they came closest to actually really succeeding on this front with was actually corruption, because getting more corruption just wasn't a strict upgrade. You didn't always want to put on your like highest corruption stuff, and there were cases where you would run different corruption setups for different bosses because it put you at a higher or lower threshold. Like I would wear more corruption on an easy boss and then take some of it off for a hard boss.
Yeah.
Things like that. But also I think it's funny. So this is kind of a tangent, but I think it's funny that Magdalena mentioned cooldown reduction. When we ended up getting cooldown reduction baked into haste.
Yeah.
Do you think they should, like, just out of nowhere, do you think they should split haste into two stats? Haste, like, one of them becoming cast speed, one of them becoming, you know, cooldown reduction.
I think that would be interesting. I think they'd have to assess what cooldown reduction actually affects and make that clear, because I think that's going to be their biggest issue. Yeah. In terms of like presenting it to the players. But no, I think that would be an interesting split to that. Where Haste like, just like, yeah, yeah.
Just so like the audience is on the same page here. I am 100% on the remove versatility train. Versatility is a bad stat and I want it to go away. Every yeah. time versatility is like the best thing, I die a little bit inside, which it has been basically like the best stat for Brewmaster for a while now. Like, not literally the best, because like mastery is better defensively, critical strike is better offensively by like a very small margin. Yeah. And so like versatility is not the best, but in practice it's just the like you want versatility because it is both very good for damage and pretty good defensively.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It just sucks. I hate it. I would rather be getting crit or mastery. Like, both of them are more interesting, do more interesting things.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that would be... It would be cool to see more, yeah, sort of more, like, focused stats like that. Just in terms of, like, testing it out. I think that's the other thing is, like... I don't know. I think WoW just ends up being too big of a game right now that where they can't do... like fun things like that, which is just like, hey, test out adding the stat for a couple weeks, right? Or to put it on PTR and see how it shakes out. So
I would love if like on the 10.0 beta, you know, we get there and they've split haste into like cast speed or spell speed, whatever they want to call it.
Oh,
and then, you know, cooldown reduction, and, you know, just add a little icon to every ability that gets affected by it. Like right now we've got the green number. If it benefits from cooldown reduction, it's got a green number. That's not explained anywhere in game, by the way, but it is how it works. But they could just add a little icon to that, that you know, if you see the icon, it's the same icon that is next to like the cooldown reduction thing on your character sheet. Like those two things go together. It's like, oh, okay, this one gets a benefit from that cooldown reduction number.
Yeah.
You know, something like that.
That would be interesting.
And then just like one thing. Brewmaster is very lucky in that our mastery is actually both good and interesting. Most specs have either a mastery that is good but not interesting, or a mastery that is interesting but not good.
Yeah.
Something like Unholy Decay. Mastery is, I believe, pretty good for them. All it does is increase their shadow damage and their pet damage.
Yeah. Like a damage.
So it's good, but it's not interesting.
Yeah. It almost feels like mastery was the like spec defining stat, right? So it's like the thing that your spec does, you know, that is what your mastery helps sort of like reinforces, right? That little bit of identity there. But yeah, you're right. Like for a lot of them, it's like either straight like just damage or healing increase, or doesn't really play at all with like the way that the spec is, right? Like,
yeah.
I mean, Mistweaver mastery was always weird. Like it was Healing Spheres at some point, which made better sense. They just sucked as an ability. They're just bad. And then now it's just like more single target healing on a spec that already does a ton of single target healing. So it's like,
yeah,
okay, we get better at what we're good at, right? So yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I think, yeah, in general, the whole thread is sort of on point, just saying like, hey, in general, stats just should be more interesting. And there's a couple of ways it could accomplish that, right? It's either more interesting itemization, meaning like just different items, like not the same item, just four item level higher, right?
Yeah.
Maybe some more interesting trinket interactions. But then, yeah, on the other side of it too is like maybe just new stats, right? Like adding in stats that sort of change the way you play versus just making you inherently stronger, right? By having more of them. So it'd be cool to see that. We'll see. We'll see what 10.0 happens. But yeah, it's definitely an interesting sort of thread through all of it.
I do think like one thing that would be interesting for them to play around with as well is we basically have all our tertiary stats are like defensive. There's speed, there's avoidance, and there's leech. Like what if those were just like there was just a defensive stat slot on items and they just always rolled one of those? Like there are fights that I would wear an avoidance set versus a leech set versus a speed set. And I know, like, you know, there's a priest in my guild that would basically always run a speed set. I think their move speed right now is like 130% because they're wearing speed gems and a bunch of speed gear and speed enchants. And I mean, zoom zoom motherfucker. They are not in that wheelchair anymore.
Exactly. Yeah, that's it. I mean, some of that stuff would be cool. I think the other side of it is you always ask the question of like, is it worth the time to put in? Because our players actually going to interact with it. Like, our players going to care if you have defensive tertiaries, right? Or whatever. So, but no, I mean, very good. Just sort of thread to sort of think about, right? I don't know if there's any real conclusion, but yeah, some interesting stuff to sort of think about. So, So cool. So any other thing on the Magdalena thing, or I guess we can pull open Scripe's little
final points spreadsheet.
So yeah, so I guess I can introduce this one a little bit. Scripe basically just tweeted out like a couple of days ago, hey, I think I'm going to write down on paper what I think we should do to make WoW better. And then actually did it. And so here is sort of, you know, you post a bunch of stuff. I'm going to basically try and sort of cherry pick some of the things I think are a little bit more interesting. So he starts out with like his goals at the top, which is like, you know, I think they're really lofty ones, and a lot of them are more, I feel like, community driven versus things that Blizzard can necessarily design around, I'll say.
Yeah. I mean, the top one is really something that Blizzard can't by themselves do much about. And that is, you know, literally he's got it. Rewire our brains to play for fun and not for efficiency, which is something I think a lot of people would benefit from, because I see a lot of people that are like trying to do the most efficient Corthia grind and absolutely not having fun burning out and quitting the game.
Right.
Yeah. And that is something where like, I actually, when I was in high school playing the game, like I was one of those like casual players that was very hardcore about being casual. Like, I was basically just leveling characters, but I was like trying to be really efficient about it and like optimal and all this stuff. Yeah. And was not having fun. And I realized ultimately that I wasn't having fun, and had this kind of moment where I was like, why am I doing this? Like, I'm just going to do it the way that's actually fun for me to do, instead of trying to like min-max how quickly I'm leveling this character, which sounds super silly, but it is what I was doing. And so I kind of already would view myself in that category. But a lot of people aren't, and they will do things that are hilariously like unfun for the sake of efficiency.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and I think, that's just sort of, it's one of those things where people are going to play the game that they like in the way that they want. And like Blizzard just puts the systems out there, and you sort of interact with them how you think is best, right? So either, whether that's building a massive spreadsheet about the best way to level your followers so you get 60 on your mission table, right? Or, you know, the things like that. So, and then I think the other interesting bullet point, just to tell, I don't want to go one by one through these, but the other one is like, don't force people to play the game every day / all the time. And again, that's the whole force thing, I think, is very much a community thing. I think, to be fair, this patch, 9.1, has probably some of the lowest amount of check-in systems I've ever seen, right? Like,
well, it depends on whether you're doing Corthia. If you're doing Corthia, it's got dailies, and dailies means you have to log in every day if you doing the dailies.
But you're not forced to do Corthia.
True. Yeah,
like there's limited power. Like, so the thing is, and we've talked about this, like the only thing you get from Corthia really at the end is sockets. And from a power perspective, that's very limited in terms of the power impact there. So like, I wouldn't say that you're like, again, the whole force thing is more of a like, I did Corthia dailies every day for like until about 2 weeks ago, right? But because I wanted to, and to be fair, they were like 30 minutes, like in and out. So I would just say that like, there's sort of a thing here too, where like Blizzard needs to put things in to make you want to log in. And sometimes that's a daily, right? It could be a different system, but like in the past, it's always been like, hey, if you want to log in and don't know, this is sort of the Destiny 2 issue I always have going back to Destiny 2 nowadays, is like, I want to log in and do something and make progress towards something. I think that's like the idea. And I think in WoW, you can do that through dailies or maybe something else, but generally like some sort of daily or some sort of like constant engaging piece of content. And in Destiny 2, the problem is they have that, but they have it like all over the place. right? Yeah. So it's like you can do PvP, you can do PvE stuff, you can do some other mode stuff, and then there's like all these different legendaries you might be able to like make progress towards. And it's just a lot of content to sort of sit down and go through. And I think in WoW, you need sort of something that is like not as crazy as Destiny 2, but like as something as like, hey, when I log in, I know I can at least do one or two things. And like, I think those are going to be dailies, or they're going to be like farm old raids, which is like something else you do. But like, you know what I mean? There's, I think the dailies provide that sort of constant, like making progress towards something there. So
yeah, I don't know. That's true. That's true. The like constant progress towards something, I think, is valuable for the kind of game that WoW is. But also, I feel like dailies don't actually do that very well. No. Especially in the case of something like Corthia, where the ultimate reward at the end of it, either you're going for like the meta achievement for the mount, which is its own ball game, or you're doing it basically for sockets and conduits. And if you're doing that, like the reward at the end is so weak, honestly. Yeah. It's not even like that it needs to be a big power level thing, but if it's going to be like a small power level thing, I think it should, for the record, be a small power level thing most. But there needs to be other things that make it so like I don't mind that it's a small power level thing, because I'm also getting, you know, this cool mount or this title or this transmog or, you know, this story content, something at the end of it.
Right, yeah. Yeah. So yeah, so I mean, I guess that's sort of the old like quote unquote force thing is always a little weird to me, because like a lot of that is, again, like community sort of.
Yeah. Oh yeah, 100%.
Yeah. All right. So he makes a couple other points. The no PTR thing, I'm just gonna skip over, because that's stupid. Like you want PTR, like you want to test this stuff. You don't want to go into even if his focus with no PTR was just on the raid, like. You want PTR.
I think they could do no PTR on the raid specifically. I think they could. I think that in order to do that, they would need to actually have an internal raid team that's clearing it in like relevant gear, like going into it, clearing it in like low mythic gear kind of thing, not in like three guys in god mode kind of thing.
Right. Yeah. 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 No, yeah. So that's sort of the idea there. Goes on to a couple other things, like, you know, some interesting points, like where BOEs are the same eye level as previous mythic eye level. With no,
I think that's a good one, actually.
That's actually a good one. I'm fine with that. Like, they basically be like BOEs would be the sort of the
catch up gear.
The stop gap, right, for what you're doing, which is fun. Gear that drops from certain activities should be stronger in that activity. So essentially, the similar to the PvP loot being stronger in PvP. With then Mythic Plus and Raiding Loot being stronger than those things, I think
that's. I don't like this one.
Really?
Yeah, I don't like that one. And specifically, like, well, okay, I don't like it being done artificially. So, for example, if Mythic Plus drops items that read, you know, this item gains 10 eye levels in Mythic Plus, I think that's dumb. I think it's dumb in PvP. I think it's dumb here. I don't like it. Well, I do think would be good if, for example, raid trinkets were better on single target, just by design. They're just like better single target trinkets. But then trinkets in Mythic Plus are better on AoE, like that kind of thing. Where like if you're doing Mythic Plus, like AoE is a big deal. At the high end, maybe you want like a single target trinket for a tyrannical week, maybe. But by and large, you're going to want those AoE trinkets. And so those drop from Mythic Plus. Just have the good AoE ones drop from Mythic Plus.
That's true. That's so basically design the items around the activity, right?
Yeah.
That'd be interesting.
And I do think this goes hand in hand with them having more unique effects in the game. I don't think it should just be trinkets anymore. This kind of ties into this stuff with Magdalena's thread about about stats being boring, but I don't think that having purely like single target, or sorry, purely like all your other slots are just stats, bundles of stats that you don't care about, is very good. It may not be tier sets, but something like what we have right now in legendaries would be great to have. And then, you know, in Mythic Plus, you know, your double kick smash legendary drops. And then in raid, you're like good single target legendary drops. And then, you know, if you get both, that's great. Maybe for mythic raiding, you want to get the AoE one for a specific fight. And then for Mythic Plus, you maybe want to get the single target one for Tyrannical Week. Again, but like designing things that are specifically for those. PvP is the weird one. I don't know how they do it with PvP, because PvP is perpetually broken. But
yeah.
Yeah.
That's fair. That'd be a cool way to sort of implement that idea. But yeah, interesting. I mean, to be fair, like my point would be like, I'd be fine with the whole, maybe not the straight, like this item is 10 item levels higher in this sort of content, but like,
yeah,
the idea that like when they used to have, what were the old PvP stats
before? Resilience.
Yeah. You know, like when they used to have resilience
like, and stuff like that.
Yeah. Maybe not a specific stat like that on items, but like something similar, I think would be interesting, where like, you can go in and do the content with like your regular gear, but if you had something with like the resilience mythic plus stat on it, it was just, you know, you did more damage and more healing way in those sense. Yeah, you know what I mean?
Imagine if they brought back multi, but instead of it being just like crit with a better animation, it literally copied a spell you cast on a second target, like had a chance to do that. And then it's like, oh, this is a great AoE stat. Not great on single target. So then like, you get more multi-strike gear from Mythic Plus, and then like a little bit of an raid. But for Mythic Plus, like the way to get your multi-strike gear for Mythic Plus is to do Mythic Plus.
Yeah. Yeah, no, yeah.
Having it be a little bit more like naturally, like I'm okay with it being like, if actually just the gear is better for Mythic Plus and Mythic Plus, but I don't think the systems that they have for loot in the game actually support that right now in any meaningful way, aside from these really artificial ways of doing it.
Yeah,
that's my opinion on it. That's fair.
Then Scribe goes on to say, I guess the other point is, make legendary items should be legendary or feel legendary, sorry, basically rare, hard to get. I'm all for this. I hate welfare legendaries, like that all started with the MOP cloak and have gone from there. I think
I have really mixed feelings on this. Because on the one hand, like I kind of agree with you. But on the other hand, the only like meaningful itemization that we get right now is trinkets and legendaries. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to like lose that, have that one piece of meaningful itemization, you know, be basically thrown away because, you know, most people aren't ever going to get a legendary, you know?
Yeah, but I think this is where I don't agree with that, this design direction that WoW has taken, which is like you gain access to everything, right? I think there needs to be item, and like really the only thing that's out of reach of most people right now is going to be like titles, right? It used to be there were just portions of the game as a player you would never get a chance to interact with or do or see or feel, right? And I think in that case, I'm fine with that sort of idea coming back, just because it does two things. Like legendaries, the previous legendaries, particularly the ones that were out in Wrath, right? So you had the one in Aldar, the healer mace, and then you had Shadowmourne.
Yeah,
and I will tell you that I never got either of those, right? I didn't get I played in Wrath paladin and I healed, but there was other healers ahead of me in terms of like priority. But the idea is like, I still felt a sense of accomplishment when we finished those as a group, right? Like the idea there is that like, and this is the one thing I think that WoW has missed, and people sort of talk about not having community or like jumping around, right? Like really today, the only community you have is your guild. I'd be completely like fine making that statement. And in a lot of cases, like if you don't actually like the people in your guild, right? Like jumping around is not that hard either. So like, you basically use a guild to jump from guild to guild from a loot perspective. So to me, like having legends that are hard to get and that are exclusive and that require a group of people to do so that one person get them, I'm perfectly fine with that as a design. So I'm fine with sort of bringing back that sort of system, right? Because then
I think that I would be okay with that if basically they took the current iteration of legendaries and just made it like a part of the game. Like the current iteration of legendaries are not legendary anymore. They just like are unique items, you know, whatever they want to call them. If they want to call them artifacts, or they want to call them whatever, I don't care. but I do think that they are the best part, the best thing that has been added to the game since tier sets.
Well, because they, I'm being a little cynical here, but legendaries are tier sets. They're just on single items, right? Like that's the idea. Is like they could take the same design space and turn it into a tier set, and like you'd have the exact same thing. Not the exact same thing. It's probably slightly different, but like that's sort of the void I think right now that legendaries fill is that sort of tier set piece. But yeah, I mean that would.
I do think like I would like to see them go further with it and have it more of like a CCG kind of thing, where like part of the game is just collecting the different legendaries as we have them now. That's just part of the game. Is like I go around and like collect the different ones and I build a deck. Like it's literally. That was part of the fun of Legion was collecting the different legendaries. The acquisition sucked, yes, but once you had a decent collection of them, like going in and thinking, okay, I'm going to use this one and this one on this fight. Yeah. And like there are a bunch of specs where you literally use the same two forever, and that sucked. And that's just a design issue.
Mistweaver. Using two non-Mistweaver specific legendaries forever.
Yeah. Brewmaster. Used basically the Keg Smash legendary when that came out in 7.1 or whatever it was, and then using just another utility legendary in that second slot, and it changed from fight to fight. You know, there are fights that I use the Zen Meditation one, which actually gives us the Zen Meditation we have now, where it's actually, well, it was a lower cooldown but also let you cast it while moving, stuff like that. And then there were like three or four different legendaries that can go in that second slot. They did different things, and there was like a default one if you didn't need any special utility. So that was like a really interesting and good part of the design. And I would love to see them go like, yeah, you just like get, you can equip like three artifacts, you know, call these artifacts. You can equip three artifacts, you know, they come in different slots, that kind of thing. That would go a long way to improving the loot system as well, in my opinion.
That's fair. I think, yeah, we'd have to unpack that one a little bit, because I think it might be a little bit difficult to balance. But yeah, I mean, it's an interesting idea to like, yeah, to move towards more like a collection for those type of things. I think the my only hesitation with something like that is it from a progression perspective, when I say, sorry, progression is the wrong word, but from a I guess progression through patches type model, like that falls down if everything's available patch one, right? Then like they have to continually add new things that sort of, and ultimately the community perception will be they need to add new things that shake up what you would currently equip. So like from patch, you don't want to use the same set of things in 9.1 and 9.2 and 9.3, even though they add new things in 9.2 and 9.3, right? Yeah.
I think it would be, for one thing, I think it would be okay if you're constantly changing them anyway. Like if I'm playing three different sets of legendaries, basically every tier, just like, here's my Mythic Plus one. Here's like the two different ones I use at different points in the raid tier. Maybe there's an extra one that I use on this one-off fight. You know, if I'm in, like doing that, I think it's more okay to have it not changed than if it's just like I'm using the same two for the, or the same three for like the entire patch and I never change them.
Yeah, and that just comes down to balancing, tuning. Right? Tuning and balancing by Blizzard, which
but also I feel like in order to do that, they need to cut out all these other nonsense systems. Like my ideal world, this is something that I think lines up actually pretty well with some of the stuff that Scrype has in this list. My ideal world, they wouldn't have soul binds and conduits and, you know, even covenant abilities. I don't want, like, just get rid of them. That we wouldn't have had Azurite. We wouldn't have had essences. We wouldn't have had corruption. We wouldn't have had the artifact weapon trees.
Yeah.
Just like tier sets, legendaries, trinkets. That's it.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is, yeah. Which is, I think he makes that point in terms of like removing the number of external systems. But yeah, I mean that, yeah. I mean, all that, I think that would be, I think a lot of people echo that, right? In terms of like a lot of the suggestions only work if they remove some of the external systems that are in place, right?
Yeah.
Stuff like that. So that's fair. That's fair. I know we're a little bit over. I do have one other thing I wanted to sort of just touch on from Scrype's list, which is a lot of his. Yeah. So he did do a couple of bullet points on rating in general, which, so a couple of things I don't necessarily agree with. And that is like, so the biggest one is like removing boss mechanics from the dungeon journal. I think that's honestly, that's very much a like world first only thing. And to be fair, like I don't think that's something they ever should do. Like, it's not like the dungeon journal itself is just helpful for people so they don't walk into an instance and have no idea what's going on, right?
Yeah. I think that there's, like kind of we were alluding to earlier, there's really only one way this works and makes sense, and that is that they simplify the fights. Like, yeah. they would have to simplify the fights. They would have to improve the visual language of the mechanics, do something like the Final Fantasy approach of, you know, when you've got a stack mechanic, it always has the same marker. It's a very big, very visible marker, very, like, doesn't fit into the fight, but you've seen it across 30 different bosses, you know, right, across basically heroic dungeons, across normal dungeons, normal raids. It's just the same visual indicator. So you can understand it without needing a dungeon journal. And I think in order for this suggestion to make sense, they would have to do something like that.
Yeah, no, I agree. Yeah, and then he goes on to, I don't agree with sort of removing it. And I think, if anything, the way that this potentially works is they remove it for, like, the first week. And they do it I'll look at it, Destiny 2 as an example, where, like, Destiny 2, whenever they release a raid, there's a 24-hour period where, like, they don't have dungeon journals, but you're essentially, like, power creep locked for those 24 hours or power locked for those 24 hours. So, like, the idea is only the best guilds or best groups are going to go after trying to complete it while they don't have, like, essentially unlimited power scaling. So, like, a similar idea from this would be Blizzard could potentially implement something where, like, the first week of Mythic, you know, you have no boss mechanics in the dungeon journal or, like, anything else like that that comes out. The problem is that then goes into the whole PTR thing where, like, you wouldn't test the boss on PTR and we'd never actually know what the bosses do. So, like, from an information perspective, then a bunch of people are going to get their information just based on the first world, first guilds going in and, like, killing them, right? Yeah. So,
I mean, even if you look at stuff in Final Fantasy where they don't have dungeon journals, they do have guides. And people do generally, like, trying to pug stuff, people do expect that you've, like, gone and watched a guide generally.
Yeah.
Like, you can get into groups and you can get through groups without having watched a guide, but people do like it when you go in, you know, you go and you do Titania or you do, you know, Innocence or whatever, and you've already watched a video guide on, like, how the fight works and you know the mechanics, you know how to do it.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So that'd be one thing I don't necessarily agree with. And then he had two other, I guess, kind of points that I think I kind of liked. And then if there's anything else we can talk through from your side, but the other one was basically doing a 10-man only heroic difficulty raid, like, basically a 1-3 boss raid in between the other raid tiers and be the major tiers would be nice in terms of, like, shaking up new things and also potentially giving guilds struggling in Mythic another gear source, right?
Yep.
In terms of, like, some power increases outside of just Mythic only. But I'll tell you, like, in general, this only works if, like, other things happen. Cause, like, I think we talked about this a little bit, is, like, a lot of people, like, I walked into, like, the last four bosses of this raid literally needing only an item or two off of one, like one or two, right? Like, I needed nothing from Guardian and nothing from Fatescribe. So it's just like, and all my other loot was from Mythic Plus or, like, from the vault. So it's just like, there's something there, but it'd be cool to get, like, a 10 man only heroic thing, right? Between raids to sort of just a little bit more content there. And the other one was just scaling down old content. So you could do it, like, at appropriate levels, like with a group. That would be fun to do. I think maybe not scaling it down, but, like, scaling it such that, like, a 5-man group could go in and do it as a team would be interesting and maybe fun, or maybe 10-man group, right?
Yeah.
The old stuff. So, but yeah. But yeah, that was, I mean, some interesting points from Skype. I think a lot of it, though, is through the lens of him wanting him playing the game at a world first level versus, like,
And their experience for, like,
millions of players.
Yeah. So they went and they did, like, the blind rating in Final Fantasy. And a lot of this reads is, like, I want to replicate that experience in WoW. That's where a lot of these suggestions, I think, come from. But there are things like, one of the things he's got under the rating section is, like, bosses should be more of a skill and tactic check than a DPS check, than a gear check. And I 100% agree with this. I've been saying this for years now. I want them to not tune bosses so tightly. I've been saying this for a long time. I think I've said it before on this podcast, like, last year. I want them to not tune bosses as tightly, you know, having to, like, and I mean, basically I view it as a failure that some of these bosses are 300 pull bosses. That's just a failure as far as I'm concerned. Because it's just too much. And it's, I guess it's one thing when it's like a failure, when it's like you're wiping because the boss is tuned so incredibly tightly that you cannot, you know, you can't make mistakes.
Yeah.
Versus something where it's just a long fight and you have to learn each stage. And then once you have learned all the stages, you know, you go through and you do it and it's fine. But, you know, I don't like the tuning level of Mythic right now. I think it's actually better right now than it was on, say, Azshara.
Mm-hmm.
Azshara was real bad. But then, like the Denathrius, I think, was the point that they did it the best. And it wasn't easy, you know.
Yeah.
But it was also, you know, you didn't need Biskir, you know. The damage check was tight, but once you got comfortable with the fight, we were beating the damage check by like 20 seconds.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's maybe something that Denathrius is probably tuned even a little bit too high for where it was. Cause like, you know, my guild killed it. We were maybe 3 or 4 eye levels higher than when Limit and Echo killed it.
Yeah.
And they had to do splits to reach that eye level.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's sort of this, I don't know, there to me, I don't know if it's tuned wrong, right? Because there is a skill in executing, and like,
yeah,
there's the ability to punish mistakes. So like, I think you, like, in terms of like fight difficulty, right, you can make a fight that, like, I don't know, I guess in my mind, like, from a tuning perspective, there needs to be this balance of like, you can't have a fight where like, if you make a mistake, you can continue on like nothing happened, right? It's not a big deal. Or, you know, but at the same token, I get there is frustration around like, if you make one mistake at all, the fight is over, which I think is too tightly tuned, right? Like,
yeah,
to be fair,
go ahead.
I was gonna say, like, when you get like a fight where this sort of manifests itself, right, is there's two sort of, I guess, opposing things. You have original Painsmith, right, where if anyone died, essentially it was a wipe because you wouldn't make the DPS checks, right? Like, yeah. And the pass fail condition was instant. It was, did you make this precise movement or not, right? Like, yeah. Versus you have a similar sort of fail condition on Guardian, which Guardian wasn't a difficult fight, but fail condition there is like, if you don't soak the pylons, right, or put the bombs on the pylons, right, you will wipe just based on not having enough time. So, and like, the idea is like the pylon check is not difficult, but it can introduce like a piece of failure that you might be able to overcome. Like, I think you can miss maybe one bomb and still make
you
it.
You can miss one on each, I think, and still make it.
Yeah, but I think there's sort of two, I guess, things there. And I think it's, to me, I think difficult fights, I don't know. I think I'm the type of person that just, I'm fine with difficult execution in terms of like, one failure throws it off, but I don't mind that. But I can definitely feel the frustration
on this like scope and scale of it, right? Like, I actually think Painsmith is pretty fine. Like, by the time we did Painsmith, the damage check wasn't a big deal. It was really just if everybody did the dance, you beat the boss. I think that's fine. That's actually perfectly okay. I liked that boss. I haven't re-killed it yet, but I like that boss. Versus something, you know, Sylvanas in phase 2 was pretty noteworthy. Actually, even in phase 1, like, if you fall behind on damage for whatever reason, you know, maybe the boss jumps to the wrong location with Veil, and now you don't get, you know, your ranged can't hit both the arrows and the boss, you know. Mm-hmm. So you start falling behind on damage. Well, now you can't make the damage check to get out before the final set of chains. So now you know you're going to wipe 3 minutes from now because you just lost 12 seconds of DPS on the boss.
That's fair. It's like, yeah.
That's frustrating. That's really frustrating. And some of that's just the intersection of bad mechanics and tight DPS checks. Mm-hmm. And they could relax the DPS check or they could fix the mechanics. You know?
That's true, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think that's, there's like, I guess you could go a couple different ways. For me, fight, like, I'm never upset about fight difficulty. It's generally, I get more annoyed or upset about, like, individual mechanics that just
feel like bullshit.
Yeah.
Stuff I think like that's, Beckons on Azara.
But, well, I mean, Beckon on Azara, I think, was one, but I think the worst part of Azara to me was actually the line of sight component. Yeah,
okay.
Right, yes. Like that, like I was like Beckon, you sort of, okay, like you got to get out and it's sort of kind of annoying, but you can figure it out, right? Just like another movement or you have to be in a certain position, right, and ready for it. But like the line of sight aspect of it was just, as a healer, was really, really frustrating.
It was really frustrating as a tank too, because at that point in time, tanks were really dependent on incoming, like just constant incoming heals. Yeah. And so when you had the line of sight, it got really spicy.
Like movement. Yeah, like particular movement. If you didn't put the boss exactly where it needed to be, then like people were in line of sight when they shouldn't, you know, like.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that fight in more mechanics, like it's, to me, my frustration comes more from probably individual mechanics than like in general a fight being too hard or too easy or a mechanic being pass fail. It's more of like, I'm fine with pass fail mechanics like spikes on Painsmith or whatever, right? But like when a mechanic is just actively annoying, which is a very bad description, I think, but it's where it's like the feedback from the mechanic. Yeah. Like the feedback doesn't match up with like what you're expecting, or like the mechanic requires you to respond in a way that you have never really responded before. Right. And like line of sight, to be fair, really wasn't a thing in WoW. I mean, we used to line of sight Drakes and Blackwing Lair. Right, like that was, maybe I'm missing a fight between Blackwing Lair and Queen Azara. I probably am, where line of sight actually played a part in like doing the fight. But like, those would have been the last bosses that at least pop into mind that like line of sight proved to be such a big thing. Yeah. Where you weren't doing some like cheesy tracks. There's always line of sight things like,
Line of sight mechanic to make it not go off kind of stuff.
Yeah. But like where it was baked into like, hey, this is how you have to do the fight. Yeah. Right, it's just like that's the part of mechanics that get frustrating for me. So
I definitely agree. There's mechanics that are frustrating that are unfortunately common in their fight design. Mm-hmm. Stuff like I'm going to go back again to Veil of Darkness on Sylvanas in phase one. It's not really a skill check to have the ability, like to have the Veil target the largest clump of players. It's really just like a mechanic that punishes you for, in this case, having melee, like having more melee than ranged, which is something they said they were moving away from. You can't, because the damage check is tight, you can't just have all of your melee AFK on top of the ranged when she jumps away. They're going to lose 12 seconds of DPS. Like, they go, they follow her, they do DPS, and then she jumps on the ranged. Like, so either they can reduce the damage check, or they can make it so it always targets the largest clump of ranged players. So you still have that, like, control and making sure your range gets stacked.
Right.
Don't have it randomly jump to the middle of the room, or to the opposite end of the room.
That's fair, yeah. Yeah, those type of mechanics that don't treat melee and range the same are, definitely can be frustrating for sure, so.
We are quite over time, and I know you've got stuff that you got to take care of this afternoon.
Unfortunately, do so.
So maybe we pick up some of this conversation next week on the podcast, because I think there's more from this list that Scribe's got, more from like the fight design kind of thing. Maybe we want to talk about. Also, I'm curious. You said you were going to pick up Final Fantasy again at some point and like try it again. Have you done that?
No, I got sucked into
New World. You got into New World, yeah.
Unfortunately. Yeah. So I've been playing a lot of that.
I'm level 22 now.
Gotcha. I've also got sucked into setting up a WoW private server. I don't know if I should say out loud, but more for like personal use. So
I used to be a developer on a Burning Crusade Blizz-like private server.
Yeah.
Before I could actually pay the retail sub. So
nice. Yeah, no, I was thinking about, to be fair, getting into just like encounter, just like how they cobble together encounter.
I thought about trying that. Like what about just taking, the problem is that like, you know, you try and take a Shadowlands private server and nothing works. Everything's broken.
Yeah, no. And I wasn't trying to make like a current retail fight. I was going to do it basically to use like, what is it, Mangos or whatever the most Mangos. Stable, like classic private server bases, and just build something back then. Because like I used to design fights like just in my head, and like I have like a PowerPoint deck that's like different fight designs and like, hey, what's the goal here and like how it plays out. So I thought about actually doing that, but that might be a separate project. It'd be cool to like set something up and see if like people would want to actually try it out. But
because I had thought about like trying to do some like, what if I redesigned this tank, but I would want to be doing it in the current context, and you can't do that with private servers because they're just too far behind the curve. But you could take like a Wrath tank and redesign it, you know.
Yeah, that's true.
Or yeah, Wrath, or Cataclysm fight. Cataclysm actually probably works now. I know Burning Crusade was basically reaching the kind of feature complete all the raid fights work around the time the Cataclysm launched in terms of private servers.
Gotcha. Like,
there are still some quests that didn't work, but raid fights generally worked. Dungeon encounters generally worked. I know on our server, the like big thing that didn't work was actually the timed stuff in what's the Amani dungeon? The Amani Warbear dungeon.
Oh, Zul'aman.
Yeah. The timed event in Zul'aman didn't work.
Gotcha. Okay. But, but that's sort of New World, unfortunately, has been where I've spent a bunch of time lately. And then this WoW private server thing was sort of just getting off the ground, but I think it'd be interesting to see. I read somebody posting about how they scripted a simple quest, and it blew my mind the amount of work that went into it. So I was like,
yeah,
I got to kind of see this for myself. Like,
I wrote boss scripts for half of the bosses in Sunwell Plateau, as well as several bosses in Black Temple, and one boss in Tempest Keep, and a couple of heroic dungeon bosses. So if you get into that and you've got questions, I have experience with Trinity Core. Awesome. This was from literally 15 years ago now, but it can't have changed that much, right?
I might check that. I might pick your brain on that. But yeah, that might be a different project we put out there, so to test it. So
yeah. Oh, also, so this is way off topic now, but talk to Shrike. The bird lady would be interested.
All right. Yeah. Maybe I'll reach out and see. But yeah. It's sort of just a not to really even recreate anything, but to like build something brand new just based on like what I think might work or be cool. So, but we'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see how far we get. Maybe just first getting it set up is the first step. And then once it actually runs and I can log in, we'll start going from there.
Yeah.
Cool.
All right.
Awesome.
Well, that is going to be it for the show today. Thank you all for coming, hanging out, listening. Also, I apologize. The YouTube version of last week's episode is still not up. There were Twitch issues. I couldn't export the VOD to YouTube. It is finally over there, so it'll be up today. So it'll be a double feature on YouTube. Unfortunately, if you're watching this on YouTube, you probably are watching it in order. Maybe. I don't know. So you wouldn't know that. But that's what happened. Anyway, thank you all for watching and listening. If you enjoyed the show and you want to support it and the other work that we do over at the Peak of Serenity, you can do that by supporting our Patreon over at patreon.com/Peak of Serenity. And of course, we have our Discord, which is open to everybody. And I would highly encourage you, if you are into monks or WoW or both, to come and hang out in the lounge channels. Always a good time. I think today they're talking about the Dota tournament more than anything else in Brew Lounge, taking a break from F1 to talk about the Doters. But yeah, it's a good place. It's a good time. But that is it for the show today. So thank you, and we will see you next week.
Bye.